Then there's an apology from Sheila Shobesitole. Okay, that is the same apology. Those are the apology. Honorable Krumbok.
Chair, can you just guide us? What is the quorum for this meeting and what are the implications if we don't have a quorum?
We don't need to have a quorum because we are not going to make any decision. But it's just a presentation. But the attendance is...
Quorum 8. Quorum 8, yeah.
5, the IFC is not the COVID. But we do not have to wait. If we are going to make a decision, we wouldn't go on. But now we are getting a presentation with the hope that they are still going to come to the meeting. But let us then start. First, Mr. Dirk van Schalkwyk, the acting DG, Ms. Beulah Musupe. Chief Director of Transformation, and Mr. Ralph Ackerman, the Chief Financial Officer. You are all welcome to the committee. And we are not going to make any input before, except just a few comments that we are not seeing a lot of transformation in the tourism industry, but that may be what is apparent and not what is actual. So perhaps if you can just assist and tell us what exactly is happening. And then there are areas of equitable distribution like assisting co-ops, mentoring, extension services, promoting partnerships, financial support, and the like. I have just had an experience of an Indian lady that has been looking for support. She has a property. She wanted to develop an existing property worth about 3 million rand, and then she could not get assistance in a lot of government agencies, but I do not know what the problem was, whether it was with the enterprise or not, but these are the problems that we encounter. We are not seeing a lot in hotels that are owned, and then we do not know whether it's because of a lack of government support or lack of initiative from people, but let us discuss about these things with the intention of getting an improvement of broad-based economic empowerment. And that means having even a few small enterprises selling crafts. But there should be a difference that discernible distance for us and for people in the street. The research, what is available, and then in terms of research, other countries, and those types of things. And rural development. What is our state in as far as rural development is concerned? For instance, I was in the Eastern Cape this weekend, and there are two tourism areas. That is Copley Webs or something. I don't know how it is pronounced. Then Dwesa. The roads going to those areas are not attractive to get there. I had to use the road to Dwesa. I know it is not your fault, but how are we trying to assist and flag these issues to cabinet so that perhaps some of these things become more prominent. Some of our problems become more prominent so that they can address. The industrial strategy, what are targeted factors that will assist in based black economic empowerment given the strategy. I know that the strategy is quite recent. There is nothing most probably we have done there, but most probably there are initial plans that we have put in place or there could be discussion. These are the types of things from our side that we would like to hear. And then I know you've got a plan. I've received your presentation this morning. But at the same time, the presentation will when we react, we are going to respond in terms of what we actually see and what we actually hear, and then try and take it from there. But we do not expect any distinct hostile, distinct questions and so forth. But questions have got to be there, being incisive questions, because we do need to improve the black economic empowerment in the sector. With those few words, then I leave it to you, Mr. Acting Director General, for together with your team. I see that we have a presentation. I shall relocate and sit there in order to be able to share your good presentation. Thanks.
Thank you, Chair, and honourable members. I think we like to be back in Cape Town and at the Portfolio Committee. Beulah will do the presentation. Just to say that the EXA unit that were outside the department, originally the BEE component was within the department. It was then moved outside the department. But with a dedicated department now, this whole unit has been brought back into the department, and I think that she can explain the reasons for that. So I'll hand over to Beulah, who will deal with this.
Okay. Tell us if it is because we do not allocate enough resources, because we've got to know in order to be able to objectively solve the problems that are before us. We do not want unrest unnecessarily, people saying that there is no change in the country.
Thank you, Acting DG. Thank you, Chairperson. As indicated, I'll be the one presenting on the transformation status. And in terms of the process that we will undertake in going through the presentation, I will speak to the issue that the Acting DG has already started on, that is our incorporation into the department. I'll touch on the advisory mechanism that will be set up in order to support our efforts. Then we will go into the status of our sector charter. We'll also look at the appointment of the National BEE Advisory Council, its role, and what it then means in terms of our requirement to report to Cabinet annually. I will discuss as well the alignment between the preferential procurement framework and the broad-based BEE policies. We'll then look at a summation of our 2010-11 business plan, and in there we will take you through the various initiatives that we will be embarking on in this year in order for us to bridge some of the gaps that have been identified in terms of us rapidly transforming the industry. We'll touch on the measuring of progress to date, challenges that we are experiencing, and how we are responding to those challenges. We have, from the 1st of April, been incorporated into the National Department of Tourism. And mostly the reason for us going back to the department is basically to afford us access to the necessary support for us to implement the work that we have been mandated to do and achieve maximum impact. We realize that given that BEE as a policy has a lifespan of 10 years, of which three have already passed and we left with only seven, it becomes more critical that whatever resources are there in terms of support, we leverage on each other and ensure that we are then able to have a bigger impact and the desired results in terms of the planning that we have for the next 5 years. In terms of the mandate that we were initially set up with, that remains the same. We will continue to monitor and facilitate transformation in partnership with the private sector. And here, when we talk in partnership with the private sector, you will previously remember that When we were instituted as the Tourism Empowerment Council, we had an advisory council which functioned as a board to advise on how BE is to be implemented and how private sector will embark on compliance. And this council essentially consisted of members from the private sector, from civil society, from labor. What we'll be doing now, we will continue with that, but we're going to work out a mechanism, because in terms of the requirements of setting up a council, there has to be a legal framework around that. And what we need to do is ensure that the work that the council was mandated to do, that is basically ensuring that there's a platform where public sector and private sector work together towards transformation, that continues, whether we are in the department or not, but that has to continue. And hence, we are now working on developing a mechanism that will allow for the continued interaction between public sector, private, community, as well as organized labor. As a sector, tourism is one of three sectors that have been awarded a Section 9 status, which basically means our sector charter has a legal status. Now, this legal status, which was awarded to us in May 2009, basically becomes binding on public sector, that when public sector procures, they will have to look at the requirements of a broad-based black economic empowerment to ensure that whoever they procure from, that is in terms of your tourism services and products, that person complies to the tourism sector code. For the facilitation of that process, we require verification agencies. And these verification agencies are accredited by the DTI in order for them to verify that tourism establishments do comply with the sector code. To date, the DTI agency SANAS, which is the body that accredits verification agencies, has accredited 29 verification agencies. But these have only been accredited on the DTI Code of Good Practice. None have thus far been accredited on sector-specific charters like ourselves. And it has been indicated that for them to verify tourism-specific entities, they will have to be accredited for that sector-specific scorecard. As indicated earlier, we are now left with 7 years in which to implement the gazetted scorecard as was presented last year. The National BE Advisory Council is another element of the Act which needs to support the implementation of transformation nationally across sectors. Now, at the previous presentation to the Portfolio Committee, we had indicated that one of the big challenges that we are experiencing is the non-appointment of this council. This council's role, key role, is to report to Cabinet on the state of transformation nationally, breaking it down to the various sectors that have been awarded the Section 9 status. This council has now been appointed. They were appointed in December last year and held the inaugural meeting this year on the 4th of February. It is a council that is chaired by the President. And this has been done in order to elevate the importance of transformation in our country. We have thus far not yet had an opportunity to meet with them, but the DTI Secretariat responsible for the running of the National BE Advisory Council has advised that we will have an opportunity to meet with the Council in order for us to give a brief status of where we are as sector charters. The DTI Minister, where the Secretariat of the National BE Advisory Council lies, will be the Deputy Chairperson. And the total Council consists of business, labor, government, and community. And this you will see also mirrors the reporting mechanism that we also have as a sector charter. Given that transformation is viewed as a process that requires all inputs, it's not just between government and business, but it is a process that is in the interest of community, and organized labor also comes in there, and hence the representation on the National Council as well as our sector advisory mechanism has to have representation from those spheres. The role of the National BEE Advisory Council, as articulated in the Act, will essentially be to advise government on black economic empowerment, review progress in achieving black economic empowerment. The Act itself has a 10-year span. However, come the end of the 10-year, there will be an opportunity to see whether it has been effectively implemented or not, and the role of the BEE Advisory Council will be to perform that review. But also along the course of implementation towards the 2017 target, the Advisory Council will continuously measure as to whether the various sectors and nationally, if we are performing towards the targets that have been set, and along the way, where there could be lack of performance, the Advisory Council will be tasked with advising the President on what remedies would need to be taken in order for us to bridge those gaps. They'll also be tasked on the development to advise on the development and amendment or replacement of a strategy that was referred above, and this is the national strategy which the DTI will be driving in implementing transformation. If requested so, they would advise on the draft transformation charters. As I mentioned, we are one of three that have been given a Section 9 status. There are other sectors that are in the process of applying, and those applications will then be reviewed by the Advisory Council whether they should be granted that status or not. They will also facilitate partnerships between organs of state and the private sector that will advance the objectives of this Act. The briefing that we have received to date from the Secretariat is that we are expected to prepare an interim report that will go to the Advisory Council to report to Cabinet within the next 6 to 10 months. Public sector compliance and reporting will be the responsibility of the DTI BE unit, but that does not then divorce us as a sector from working with public sector in advising them on how they can use the tourism sector code to reach compliance in their various environments. We are still tasked with that as part of our mandate. But the overall reporting on how government is complying to the Act will be the responsibility of the DTI. And to this end, the DTI has developed a BEE portal, which will essentially be used as the basic platform on which information will be fed from government departments, their public entities, in order for that information to be downloaded and regular reports presented to the minister, the DTI minister. Once with the establishment of the National BEE Advisory Council, we are now expected to submit our report annually. And the process that will be followed is that we will have to have in place our advisory mechanism, which will be the partnership between public and private sector. And the reason is that we have been given the Section 9 status because we were able to demonstrate that the objectives of transformation for this sector have been negotiated between government and public sector and all interested parties. And so in the reporting, these parties have to be the ones that report to the National Advisory Council. Progress presented will be reviewed and presented to Cabinet by the Advisory Council. Should the results be found to be wanting in terms of the targets that the sector has set for itself, the Advisory Council will have the power to review and even revoke the status, the 69 status, and that will then place the sector under the DTI Generic Code of Good Practice. And some of the targets that are in there do not quite favor the sector's transformation objectives. For instance, with the tourism sector, majority of our businesses fall below the 5 million threshold of the DTI Code of Good Practice. Hence, with our sector-specific Code of Good Practice, that threshold has been lowered to 2.5 in order for us to capture the majority of businesses that are operating at that level. Should we not perform and reach the targets that we've agreed on as a sector, this would mean that we are then placed under the DTI Code of Good Practice with a threshold of 5 million, excluding majority of the players in this industry. And during the consultation period, the industry, the private sector, was the one that said they want a 2.5 million because transformation cannot be left only to the large and listed companies. it has to be responsibility of all players as much as possible without compromising survivalist businesses. And so it is in the interest of the industry to reach the targets that have been set and ensure that we maintain our Section 9 status going to the 27 end period of the policy. On the Public Preferential Procurement Framework Act and the Broad-Based BE Act, the lack of alignment remains a challenge. The Minister of Finance last year in November issued for comment the interim measurements that have been agreed to between them and the DTI. The process has not moved further since November, and we're still awaiting the finalization of that alignment. But this remains a challenge because without the alignment, it becomes difficult for government departments to report on their compliance because their procurement is mainly currently being driven by the narrow-based Preferential Procurement Act. And hence, we need to ensure that there is alignment to make reporting for public sector possible. These are the business plan highlights, looking at where we've come from and where we are in, with our incorporation into the department, leveraging on the resources that are there, addressing the challenges that have been addressed, the challenges that have been identified. The main objective from our unit, the transformation unit, is to see to private sector compliance to the gazetted code of good practice, in line with the targets that have been set for tourism. And here we'll be measuring the number of black majority-owned small, medium, and large enterprises, the number of tourism enterprises verified with a BEE rating. And the initiatives around this is that we need to come up with those mechanisms and initiatives that will encourage and make it easier for private sector to comply. People already are running businesses, and sometimes the view is that adding compliance to auditing processes that are there already is just adding another area of work that is going to take the business away from what it's there for. And so we need to ensure that we develop those instruments that make it possible, firstly, for black businesses to enter and stay in this industry successfully. We need to come up with those tools that will make it possible for private sector to find partners that will grow their enterprises. And here we'll be developing a funding model for BEE transactions. And this has come out from the recessionary period that we're just coming out of. There's been a strong need to look at how we structure our BEE deals to ensure that these create viable enterprises at the end of the day. And should there be a knock in terms of economic trends, that BEE deals don't suffer in the process. And so we will be looking at how we structure these to ensure that we're not only bringing to the fold those that are seasoned business people, but young entrepreneurs are able to enter the market, rural communities are able to get in and participate, women. And so it has to be a structure that enables those that are truly disadvantaged to enter this market comfortably with some cushion and guidance. We'll also be facilitating a 1 billion BE deals fund through financing channels such as your IDCs, your coolers. At the moment, you have all these financing institutions at a national level, at a provincial level, and some have tourism as one of the areas that they will finance, some do not. And those that do not, it's primarily because they have not yet identified tourism in line with the national priorities. And so what we'll be doing is essentially bringing their allocation of funding for tourism initiatives in line with what we are doing to bring about empowerment in this industry, but also in line with our national priorities. And when looking at the pool of funds that are available, we have been able to look to see that $1 billion is feasible. It's actually very conservative. It is feasible for us to, at a national and a provincial level, to pull together all the funding that is there to ensure that there's dedicated financial resources earmarked for tourism empowerment. We'll also, in this regard, publish an annual report that will show how we are faring in terms of providing funding for the various initiatives at provincial and national level. The number of tourism enterprises verified with a BEE rating, this KPI we have put in order to encourage those that do not necessarily have to do verification to also be part of the verification process. Because once everyone is part of it, we will then start realizing rapid transformation. And in this regard, we have an element on our scorecard where big business will be awarded points for assisting smaller enterprises to get verification. So they will absorb the cost of verification for smaller enterprises. And what we will be doing is raising awareness around this for big business to make verification affordable for small business, and therefore, because it's not coming at an additional cost, it becomes more attractive for small business. We will also be hosting verification workshops for the verification agencies. This we do because when we host these workshops, they are able to use their participation as proof of their understanding of the technical interpretation of our scorecard, which then enables them to acquire accreditation from SANA. The number of compliant businesses, level 4 and above. With this indicator, what we want is to rapidly get the industry to reach the level 4 compliance level, where you are essentially regarded as compliant. We are hoping that with the first round that we will, through the transformation guide which we have already developed and is in the process of being published, that we will use the easy guide to help industry to achieve compliance, where they can look at what is required under the various elements and see what they will need to do in their various enterprises in order to reach compliance. Once the industry at all levels, whether you're a qualifying small enterprise, a medium enterprise, or a large enterprise, reaches compliance at level 4, we would be much closer to reaching our 2017 targets without dragging it to 2017. But instead, what we will do is then focus the rest of the period to get the industry to reach level 1 compliance, which is where we will see the majority of our people empowered in terms of skills development, in terms of graduates being absorbed in the market, in terms of your rural communities also benefiting from empowerment. We will also be leveraging public sector spend to promote tourism transformation. And in this regard, we will look at increasing the number of state organs compliant with the tourism charter and scorecard. And earlier on, I indicated that public sector reporting is the responsibility of the DTI. However, as a sector charter, we still have a responsibility of engaging the various public sector departments and the entities on what are the requirements of the tourism sector code and how they can play their role in empowering enterprises that are compliant. The initiatives around here is that we will continue with our provincial BE focal points, where we have all nine provinces participating, but also we have participation by the key metros. In this forum, we have developed a reporting template which allows the provinces and the key metros to present their reports in terms of how they're doing in the various categories. We will be hosting mega focal point meetings, which will include your CFOs, because there, again, we picked up that some of the challenges in reporting lie in the supply chain side of operations, and so it's important that at a certain point we engage people at their supply chain level and ensure that they understand the reporting requirements and they can also assist in us being able to get the information that's required. We will also, as part of making it easy for public sector to find these empowered entities, publish a booklet of all empowered tourism products and services. And this will also be a way of us encouraging private sector to comply, because with this booklet, they know that on the public sector side, even private sector, anyone that's willing and wishing to participate in empowerment of those that are compliant, they will be easy to reach both online and in print format. One of our other objectives is to achieve chosen beneficiation through the empowerment of members from designated groups. And from the designated groups, you essentially covering their rural communities, women, youth, people with disabilities. And here we're looking at increasing the number of black new graduates absorbed by the sector, which falls under our CSI element of the scorecard. The initiatives here, we have the Black Talent Database, which will be extended to form part of the Tourism Human Resource Development Strategy. And this is one of the indications of how being incorporated into the department is now going to benefit TEXA more, because now we're able to link up with the various departmental programs that are already there that then increase the impact of our programs as well from an empowerment perspective. We are developing a public-private partnership program for the training and development of tourism resources for immediate employment. And this has been designed to address two challenges. Tourism graduates that are not able to enter the markets immediately after graduation, but also the gap between what is studied and what employers are looking for. Through this program, which at the moment it's in its conceptual stages, but we're looking at a program that will run 12 to 18 months where a graduate will have the opportunity to get workplace experience with various tourism entities in the different subsectors. And through that program, they will then identify as an employee which areas they are strong at and which areas they would prefer to work. And through that 8-month period, they then gain overall experience of how the tourism sector functions. This we have done as a public-private partnership, not purely for the workplace experience, but also financially we would not be able to carry such a program. And so it becomes essential that we get private sector as a partner, an active partner in this relationship, because we should not allow a situation where government is the only one that seems to be driving all these initiatives. We got our Section 9 status because we said this is a partnership between government and private sector. And through programs like these, we allow private sector to play their role as well, demonstrating that we have a healthy, active partnership with private sector. Another objective we have is to achieve tourism increasing the number of black women executives. And when we talk black women, women is all-encompassing. It's all-encompassing with regards to we're talking rural women, we're talking women with disabilities, we're talking young women. And we're looking at developing forums which will help function as mentorship forums, where we will identify champions from the industry that can mentor other women that are up and coming, that will provide and stimulate the kind of debate that will help us address some of the basic challenges, because some are not as obvious as there are no women sitting on boards, but one has to understand what are the reasons, what needs to be done to make it possible for these women, once they're there, to play a meaningful role at the end of the day. We will also be performing a survey to find out the reasons for the current situation. And also, we're looking at having 5 candidates participate in the MLB Awards in the women category. To measure our progress to date, when the Tourism Empowerment Council was established, before they were gazetted, there was a baseline done. And since, as I indicated, last year in May, we were gazetted, and so we now have a gazetted scorecard which is aligned to the DTI Code of Good Practice. With that in place and the appointment of the National BE Advisory Council in December last year, we're now in a position to perform a study on the state of transformation for the tourism sector, which will form part of the interim reporting to the National BE Advisory Council. And at the moment, we have embarked on that study. And the study will basically measure provincial state of transformation. It will measure transformation by subsector and also provide beneficiary views on transformation. What we find often is that whilst any measurement comes out, you're given numbers. The softer issues in terms of attitudinal issues, they are not necessarily measured. And what one then gets to find is you present your report and you indicate that so much has transformed, so that much has transformed. But in terms of how people view things, that is not measured. And it's important that we are on the path of how people feel, what people see versus what the numbers are saying. And so this survey will measure that as well. And it will then, at the end of the day, provide a national feel as to where we are in terms of the state of transformation from a perceived perspective, from what is real, and in between the two, what we will need to respond to in the next coming years to ensure that we reach the desired impact. The study itself, we have discussed with a service provider that has been identified, and we envisage with the depth of study that we want to embark on, we envisage that we will have the results around November this year, just in time for us to report to the National Bee Advisory Council. So we are allowing for enough time for various stakeholders to be interviewed. For those that are not online, who are not in major cities, people in far lying out areas, for people in rural communities where there is tourism potential, we are allowing the time to ensure that we reach the tourism community far and wide and ensure that whatever results we receive at the end of the day is a true reflection of what is happening out there. The challenges. Our work is not without its challenges, and some of the challenges that we have picked up as we go along in our facilitation work is that access to finance remains a big challenge. Hence, in our business plan, we have tried to address that by looking at how we can pull the financing resources that are at a national and provincial level to find at least $1 billion that would be dedicated to tourism BEE deals. The production of scarce and critical skills, whilst on the one end, one can look at the participation of previously disadvantaged people within the various spheres of tourism. And then you, on the other end, you have to look at what is preventing access to those levels. And some of it is the rate at which we are producing scarce and critical skills. And so it becomes important that when in developing our human resource development strategy, that we look at how we're going to use that strategy to address this particular challenge. Cultural barriers preventing women, especially in rural communities, from advancing in tourism. We have a few of our stakeholders that have come forward with their case studies where they're involved mainly in ecotourism and agricultural tourism, and they have fully embraced transformation. But now, after doing everything that they're required to do, what they find is their women employees tend to advance much quicker when put on development programs into supervisory and management positions. However, being in a cultural setup, for instance, there's one in the Cape where he had developed about 4 women, and once they were ready to take up the managerial position, the challenge was that I'm going to be my uncle's boss or my husband's boss, and I will not be able to call them to order. That's not, you know, the way we've related. And then that has said to us, we need to go back and provide a different kind of leadership in that area, because it's not just about teaching someone technical leadership requirements, but also the community in which they operate. We need to address those socio-cultural challenges that are there to ensure that people in rural communities, whether they're men or women or young people, are able to take up their rightful positions in their participation in this industry. Dual ownership of rural land assets. We've received a challenge where, because of the dual ownership, an investor has not been able to develop a tourism route. And they have said, we need to find a way in which we can ensure that the dual ownership works for the rural community and not against them. And there again, we will need to engage your House of Traditional Leaders, engage with the Department of Rural Affairs to see how do we work within that kind of environment and ensure that tourism as a sector that can unlock rural economic potential is able to fulfill those objectives without such impediments. The global and national recession has impacted on the pace at which transformation is taking place. Focus has shifted to how does business now survive as opposed to purely just transformation. But in the in any challenge, there's always opportunity. And so we are looking at how do we use this period in order to ensure that, firstly, the pace is not compromised. The elements, the targets that we have set to achieve are not compromised, whilst at the same time ensuring that our businesses grow and are stronger to get into the next phase of implementation. Lack of alignment between broad-based BEE and the Preferential Procurement Act. And as indicated, the Department of Treasury and the DTI are working together on that one, and hopefully we will soon be getting an agreed alignment after the public comments that we received. The number of verification agencies accredited, we have 29, which have to accredit businesses across sectors. And so we require that more agencies be verified. Otherwise, it just extends the time where the time businesses need to be verified, because everyone will have to stand in line to get verified. Some of the responses that we have developed in response to this challenge through the initiatives outlined in the business plan, I've indicated the facilitation to get a pool of $1 billion to finance BEE deals through your cooler, the DBSAs, establishing a Women's Top 100 Mentorship Initiative, which will consist of the forums, which will consist of women platforms where debates can be stimulated that will address the final challenges that prevent women from accessing those levels of executive level and board memberships, establishing career development programs for graduates in partnership with the private sector, and providing support for verification agencies. When we provide that support, they will be able to acquire the accreditation much quicker than when we don't provide the support. But at the same time, we do need the DTI to come to the party and see how they can make it possible for the SANA system to get more agencies verified to ensure that sectors like tourism that have acquired the Section 9 status are able to start measuring without having to embark on studies time and time again, but use the results that are coming from the verification process to measure the true state of transformation. Ladies and gentlemen, that is my bit on where we are in terms of our move from being the Tourism Empowerment Council to being incorporated into the new department, and how, as part of the new department, where are we going to put our focus in our implementation of our mandate, which remains the same, being the facilitation and monitoring of transformation, but ensure that we leverage on the resources that we now have access to through the department to ensure that we move transformation rapidly. Thank you.
Thank you very much for a good presentation, Ms. Masupi. And perhaps before I move up, let us get questions of clarification on the presentation. Mr. Farai.
Perfect. Let me welcome the presentation. I have a number of questions.
As long as they are of clarification at this stage.
Yes. But I just wanted to get the clarity the presenter talked of the private sector, every time private sector. You know, I think it's a broad name. And whether the sector has identified those private sector. Because our aim or our mission is to see transformation. And if one did a clerk or a real transformation, you need to have your indicators. Whom do you work with and what do you expect from those people who are working with? And I'm not sure whether I was dizzy about the allocation of the money for this sector, whether it's just money. The sector is satisfied about the allocation of the funds that they are having in the sector. Lastly, Chair, is this one of this is it a board for the advisory council, where the president is the chairperson. Whether if the council wanted to take some decisions, and that decision cannot be easily advocate. Whether whom do the council can go to, because I believe the president is the head. So finally there will be nobody whom this council can go and cry to for some of their decisions of their operations. I said this, if the council were, according to me, somebody is not the president, so that if there's a problem, so that the president can intervene. Also, Chair, on the same note, I want just define this community who are in the council. I know what is the business, what is the labor government in this community. Is it the rural community? Is it the urban community? Is it the youth, women? Who is this community in this council? I pose that, Chair. Thanks.
Thank you, Chairperson. If I can start, my first question is also just on the advisory council. These 19 people, how were they chosen? On that one. Then also this decision to drop the threshold for BEE rating from 5 billion down to 2.5. Who were these people in the industry that asked for this? And how widely was this idea consulted in the tourism industry? Because my understanding is that many of these small companies are entrepreneurial, and what they don't need in their life is more bureaucracy. So I'm surprised that they actually asked for it. A lot of the discussion that you talked about seemed to sort of almost duplicate with what the CETA is doing making sure that the graduates get placed and get a work experience and all that sort of thing, from what I understood from their presentation to us. Is there not a danger of too much bureaucracy, turf battles between yourselves and CETA? And then from the budget figures you've given here, I see, I think it's 4.3 million for your programs. Does this include salaries and your infrastructure, or is this just the cost of the program? What is your total cost to the country, if I can ask?
Okay, those are the questions for clarification, and then after the response, then we can have questions now on substance.
Chair, thank you, and I will allow Beulah to respond. I think the first thing I just need to state, and you will see that from the presentation, is that the tourism function is quite fragmented in government. DTI is the major role player in setting the framework, managing the act, setting up the council, deciding who's the membership. So we can respond to those questions, but that's within the domain of DTI. And I think the same applies in the remark that the chairperson made up front around Dwesa and Suleka argument's sake. We, from the old Department of Environment, Affairs and Tourism, have invested a lot of money in Dwesa and Suleka in setting up the accommodation, setting up the experience. We've even come to the party in setting up electricity for that area and for the communities next to the road now. We can tap from that. But the problem is your roads is a responsibility of the province, Department of Transport, and there's no movement around that. So I think the challenge we're having at this stage, and when we bring the new bill of tourism to the committee, you will see we're trying to address this fragmentation, because it's quite difficult, even in this case, for us to move with the BEE charter that's been accepted, because you rely on DTI to gazette it, which was only gazetted in May 2009. It has taken them almost 16 months to get to the gazetting, which delayed our whole implementation process. And I think that was one of the major things for us to pull it back. Just another thing I want to mention up front is that, and I think it's coming from the last question, of duplicating. Now, our experience, and we couldn't state it that well, is that the movement with your CITAS is slow, and we need to make a difference. So we've taken that responsibility up and say we want to move with some of those things. So even the alignment between the TEP program and the departmental programs is for us to move, because if you are tied up in the bureaucracy and turf battles, you're never going to get to where you would like to make a difference. And I think that is the difference from why we are building some of those things into our planning process. Because we as a tourism department and the tourism portfolio committee needs to make sure that we deliver on what we have offered the people out there. I think that is our approach around this. So on the fund side, the total budget for the chief director transformation is about $7 million. It's more or less in line what they had when they were outside, but I can say it is not sufficient. Perhaps for the first year for us to start getting our processes in place as a national department, we can survive on that. But I think this is one of the areas that we really would like to sort of debate with National Treasury in the outer years, because this is where we need to make a difference. I must say that our social responsibility program is contributing to this. The alignment of the TEP program, the Tourism Enterprises program, is now been aligned to this. So we have set targets to Tourism Enterprises program of what we would like them to achieve. So I think that is just sort of some of the background for you to understand, is for us to get all of this together. Even our HR strategy was done internally in the department dealing with tourism, but there was no alignment with what TEXA was doing. And by bringing it into the department, we sort of created that environment where you can drive the same processes. So just on the budget for this chief director, it's $7 million, which includes then the salaries. It's a fairly small component, but quite effective, I must say. Then I will leave it to Beulah to clarify. I think the one about the definition of communities is always a tricky one. See where she got an answer. Thanks, Beulah.
Thanks, DG. There's two definitions I've been requested, a private sector as well as communities. In terms of who are our private sector, you're talking your owners of your accommodation, conferencing, your restaurants, it covers your travel and distribution services. So it is people who are operating tourism-related enterprises within the industry. Community, indeed, when they look at the membership, they have to cover all those areas of community, civil society, which talk to rural, people with disabilities, women, and young people. So you will find that on the 19 people that have been nominated and appointed to the National Beer Advisory Council, there would be people that cover those four key areas. The funding, Acting DJ, you touched on it, and I would just add to that to say, with the limited funding that we have, what it does is, in some areas, we are then limited to creating awareness, and there are no physical projects that we can embark on. We are limited in by using just awareness as a tool and leveraging on partnerships. And with any partnership, there has to be negotiations, and negotiations take time. And hence, you look at that time is not exactly on our side. We have a limited time. But because of the limited financial resources, one is then robbed of time by having to rely on partnerships. And indeed, if we have access to more resources, we will have a much bigger and better impact. The National BE Council reporting lines. How it works really is that the reporting mechanism from the sector, where you have discussions between your private sector, being the owners of your establishments, your community, and your organized labor. What comes out of that platform is then fed to the National BE Advisory Council, and then it's chaired by the president of the country, which is then presented to cabinet. And vice versa, if there are issues that in the process of the National BE Advisory Council executing its job, they pick up on areas that need clarification and need attention from the sector, they will then, through their secretariat, send a request to the sector reporting mechanism, and that partnership will then be the one to resolve whatever comes from the Nation of the Advisory Council and report back to it. I think, does that make sense? Okay. Then the 19 members, in terms of how they were selected, as the acting DG indicated, this is a process that was managed by the DGI, and they're the ones who recommended names to the presidency, and the presidency then made that selection from the names presented by the DGI minister. No. The 2.5 million threshold. The 2.5 million threshold for tourism, before the charter was gazetted, there was a consultative process that was embarked on nationally. Actually, there were two that took place. The first was when the actual charter was developed. And during that process at the time, the threshold was mooted actually at 1 million. And that was based on how the industry is structured, where you have 85 to 90% being small enterprises. And then the Code of Good Practice, whilst this was taking place, the DTI was developing the Code of Good Practice. And after this process, the DTI gazetted the Code of Good Practice, and in there was the threshold that they recommended of 5 million. The tourism industry then reconvened the second a national roadshow to consult again to say, this is the framework presented by the DTI. We need to align, and this is the threshold when it comes to who's exempt. And they discussed, the debate took place again on between 1 million and 5 million. The one thing that everyone agreed on was that 5 million would essentially leave transformation to your Southern Sun. Everyone else would not have to comply. And when you look at the face of the industry, the face of the industry actually belongs to the majority. And hence, then, there had to be a middle ground reached. And the DTI minister also agreed then that 2.5 is a reasonable middle ground, which would ensure that survivalist enterprises are not overburdened with compliance. The 4.3 has been answered. That's purely project budget. In terms of duplication, again here, Acting DG did indicate the whole process that when you look at your CETA processes, they do take time. But also, where we come in with our programs is that we have a private sector that has said we want to score, to get our points under skills development and employment equity. Can we have a program that can assist us to do that outside of the CETA processes? So we are specifically answering to that need for private sector to also reach compliance in terms of the elements that deal with skills development. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. I think now we've got to go to the actual substantive questions. But perhaps there are issues that need to be elaborated upon, particularly because they are not new, like the issue of the tourism charter and the scorecard. How have we performed since they were first this thing put in place? And secondly, do we have transparency mechanisms in this empowerment, because we have seen now over the years that empowerment programs sometimes favor a few individuals. And then do we have now a mechanism like transparency? There could be other mechanisms as well to safeguard against abuse or corrupt tendencies blocking this the good intentions. The other area is the tiers of government. tourism belongs to national, it belongs to provincial, it belongs to local. You find that when people apply for assistance, they are referred to the province. Others are referred to national. National refers to province. Province refers to local government. And now there is the institutions and that assist quite often escape this thing responsibility through the misalignment or for a lack of a better word of this assistance. That if I ask for assistance, I know exactly this type of assistance is in this institution. I am in Cape Town. I want this type of assistance. I go here. National. How does national assist, and whom does it assist? And lastly, in as far as this area is concerned, we have seen that we are having an industrial strategy. We've got an acronym for it. I've forgotten it now, but it's an industrial strategy. How? Pardon? IPEP. It's IPEP. How do we feature in that scheme of things? Because there is this IPEP, and that it should target sectors. It should target areas, and one would guess that now, after targeting, we say that now this much we see for empowerment, that type of thing. And then there are areas as well like mentorship and extension services, particularly if they are from the private sector, that need incentives. Who is going to pay for this, for those incentives, and how? Because you cannot just go to Southern Sun and say, Southern Sun mentor your competitor in the form of PNP and that type of thing. How do we work that one out? Or perhaps this mentorship, how does this mentorship work? Is it from government? Is it from the private sector? And then what incentives are in place to encourage this type of interaction in the industry? Those kinds of areas, I think, they need to be explained as we respond to questions. Honorable Krumbo.
Thanks, Chuck. You said this is a time for the more substantive issues, so let me ask one, which I think is a fundamental philosophical point of departure. As in so many other briefings we get, not just in this portfolio, there seems to be a default position where a government agency or department looks at outcomes and passes regulations and law to affect the outcomes. Right? So now we have this threshold, 2.5 million rand, and we now say you must comply if you reach that threshold. Now, I've never really understood why we feel in government that we can actually do that effectively and reach the kind of scenario that we ostensibly want to reach. May I ask the presenters, wouldn't it be better, rather than actually trying to micromanage the industry in that way, to in fact create the conditions or assist and facilitate the creation of the conditions which lead to the outcome that we all want, especially themselves? So instead of actually looking at the industry in the way that they do and approaching it from the point of departure that they do, wouldn't it be better to actually say, can we, for example, support what's happening in the schooling education industry, okay, and support those classes that actually promote tourism? Can we not have mentorship programs, for example, that actually make it easier for people to get into the industry? Can we not support the infant and embryonic enterprises that actually want to be there and actually create the kind of competition, create the empowerment, create a more broad-based black economic empowerment type scenario through facilitation rather than trying to micromanage the outcomes and dictating to people bureaucratically what they must and may not do? It seems to me there's a sense that government sort of has a dead hand over these things. And it just becomes harder and harder and harder for businesses to comply with more and more regulations. That is actually why we have one of the slowest growth rates in the world. Wouldn't it be easier actually to attack it from the supply side? And rather than trying to actually look at an outcome and try manipulate the outcome, make it easier for people to get into the industry in the first place and facilitate it from that angle, then you don't need the regulation. What in fact you're doing, you're creating true empowerment. Just like the comment of the panel on that.
Makasi and Maluleka.
Thank you, Chairperson. And welcome to the presentation. You know, I think I will advise that if you can please assist us in terms of at least giving us a list of businesses that is affected. Because, you know, in the last 2 weeks, we visited all the provinces checking the readiness to the FIFA World Cup. All the small businesses that we visited, not a single one that was assisted by either the department, DTI, or tourism, that is a challenge. So also, I think it will be proper for you also to give us the idea of channels that people should go through in order for them to access this assistance or this funding. Otherwise, that is a big challenge. People are just funding. They are not getting any assistance. They make loans from different angles because this from the government doesn't assist them because nowhere to be found. I think if that you can assist us in terms of also channeling them to the right channel so that at least at the end of the day we are in a position of answering when they say, no, we are not assisted. These spheres of government are not assisting us at all. Not, neither local government, no national, no provincial. That is the challenge. People are fighting for themselves to get wherever they want to be in terms of business.
Thank you, Chairperson. On the Enter 5 candidates for annual BEE awards, I want to know how are they going to work to get those 5? It is only going to work on the townships or on the urban areas, or we will include rural areas people. And then on the issue of the lacking of critical skills, I want to know how are you working with the PCTA, because it's one institution that is working under government who it is mandated to assist on skills and capacitating. On the issue of the graduate, my question was going to be aligned with how Honorable Kumbok was saying, saying, why don't you work close with the Department of Education? So that because our students are suffering when they must have their trainings on, they don't know where to go for their practicals and everything. So why don't you assist the department so that you help them to have the real skills that is needed in tourism. Also to know how are they teaching on the tourism issue. Also we have those things at schools. How are you working with schools to know that the subject is closer to what is needed in the tourism sector. And then on the issue of publishing booklets, we'll be happy if next time you'll report on the issue, and then it reflects the people from rural areas. And we think the song of rural areas will be winning the competition. We won't talk about rural if you have these things in your publications. Thank you, Chair.
Shin and Pamukwanya.
Thank you, Chairperson. Mine is also perhaps a bit of a broad question. This tourism bill, I can't remember when it's coming out. I think you said it's October, September sometime. Will it make clear the distinction between what is the role of the Department of Tourism and what is the role of the Department of Trade and Industry? Because I see a fair amount of duplication and turf war here, and I think that we need to perhaps, and I hope the bill will do this, is to perhaps make clear what the role of the department is. Because we're moving into entrepreneurial development. There's an awful lot of what I see here. And is that really the department's role? Should it not be to tourism, and then I mean to trade and industry, but then what does trade and industry know about tourism? So I want to know if there's going to be clarity with that, please.
Thank you, Chair. Maybe I'm going to be the only one who is not going to appreciate the presentation, because it is a frustrating document when you look at the contents, when you know what BBBEE is and what it has not accomplished over the years that it has been established. It becomes worse when you look at tourism, because it becomes too superfluous. It flies above the heads of the people who are meant to benefit from it. I will also echo the concerns of the previous two members that this is a duplication, actually, of what DTI is supposed to be doing. Also, when it comes to the, what do they call it here? When it comes to the bars that are lowered and lowered, how do you lower a bar to 2.5 million? Is this the capital invested, the 2.5 million, or is this the profit that the business makes? Because there is none of the people who need to be mentored and taken along with who can measure up to 2.5 million. It is still too high for the people. And I think that the people should be brought out from where they are to be led into tourism rather than measuring the already existing ones, because there are very few of those. Also, you are talking of getting finance or help from KULA, DBSA, and so on. It's like extracting a tooth. In fact, it's better to extract a tooth because you finally get it out. But getting money from these areas is impossible. I have been a chairperson of KULA for almost 6-7 years, but what has been aching me has been how bad this policy of accessing money from KULA is for the people who are emerging. These are not for emerging entrepreneurs. These are for people who are already flying. Secondly, you talk about partnerships. How do you plan to enforce these partnerships? Are you going to walk to Saul Kessler and say, I've got two miserable startups. How can you mentor them? How can you? Because business is business. Those people talk business. They don't care for small fries that are starting up. Some of us have been through all these walkways, and we know how frustrating it is to even manage to access, let alone close a deal, to access even association with these high flyers. It is impossible. So this document is meant for people who are already flying, not people who are startups, and those are the majority of our people whom we want to empower. Broad-based black economic empowerment is supposed to be digging out the people who have nothing. But this is for people who already are flying. Thank you.
Mind you, Abed, do you have a question today?
you for the thing I must listen.
Okay, thank you.
Yeah, and learn.
Okay. Okay, honorable. Okay, be phrasing your question, Mom. You shall have to ask a question.
Thank you, Chair. On the challenges, the lack of alignment between the BBBE and PPPFA. That lack of alignment. Who's responsible for that lack of alignment? Secondly, can we get the time frame when this is going to be done? We can't really say alignment things will be done when. What lack of that when? So can we get sometimes the time frame so that you must actually know when we come back and come and report you know it quickly. That's the answer. Thank you.
Okay, it's time to respond.
Chair, thank you very much, and thanks for the questions. I think it give us some direction also in our thoughts. Perhaps I will respond to some, and then I'll ask Beulah to respond. I'm going to start with the last question, the alignment. The PPPA is the Department of Finance is responsible for that act, while the broad-based black economic one is DTI. And the issue is that when the new act, PPP, was passed by Parliament, it haven't taken account of what's in the BEE. So you've got a sort of impasse between the two acts of to enforce it. And the time frames, I think that's in the hand of the Minister of Finance. We are pushing it because it's causing not even problems in the tourism, but in the departments. How do we measure our BEE target that we set? Because they took a different yardsticks for that one. Chair, as far as IPAP is concerned, your question, and I will deal with more some of those sort of process ones, is that our strategic plan is fully aligned with what's in the IPAP around the outcome 4 of government. So the whole tourism fits into the economic decent work part of that one. So our strategic plan is talking to that, addressing that specific outcomes that's set by government and by cabinet. Just to say also, Chair, that the part that we presented today is talking to one part in our strategic plan under the sector transformation, which is on page 29 of our previous document. So I think you'll see the alignment. We've just gone one step lower to get to more to the house of that one. The issue of the tiers of government, I think that this is perhaps one of the biggest problems in government, is to determine who takes responsibility, because the National Department of Tourism is responsible for setting the policy. The implementation is happening in most cases on the provincial and local government level. But the alignment of budgets for provincial and local government is not geared to tourism. Yeah, because once the equitable share has moved into the provinces, it's been cut there into their priorities, and from there it goes to local government. So I think that's where one of the problems is. What we've embarked on is to say, like we did in the environment sector, is to set up a budget structure on provincial and local government that will talk to tourism. So we are in that discussions with National Treasury at this stage, so that you need to fix this in the process of budgeting, so that the money that's been earmarked by the national fiscus goes to the right places. And I think that's one of the real things for us to sort of get funds into it. If you go and check what the provinces are allocating towards tourism, it's small fry towards what tourism is bringing into their fiscus. Because tourism is one of the, is even getting more revenue generated than mining. But that money is not then redirected into tourism. Upgrading roads, making sure that there's no potholes in these sort of things, because that brings in the money as far as tourism is concerned. So I think that's the problem around the three tiers. We, in the draft bill we're working on, we try to define what is the national minister's responsibilities and what will be the MSC's responsibilities, and what regulations will be coming from a national department and what can be done with on a provincial level, but with the concurrence of the national minister, so that there's alignment of the processes. And then I will, while I'm on that, the tourism bill, just to say that the tourism bill will give certain mandates to ministers and MECs in relation to tourism. So some of those areas that we've identified that is conflicting, we will build into our legislation. And then it's for this committee to assist us in aligning those sort of issues. I think that's crucial for us to sort of start getting that movement. What is interesting is that the new outcome-based process of government, I think, will support some of the problems we're having, in the sense that where you will have a different few departments delivering on one outcome. And therefore, the alignment between departments, for argument's sake, on tourism, to get infrastructure, to get SIA involved, your airlift strategies and all those issues, how we will build that in. I think it's going to take time to get to the point where you can see the movement, but I think it's the right direction as far as that's concerned. Can I just say that on the mentorship, and I think that's also one of the problems in government we are battling for on a national level, is we as a department do give out bursaries. And some of that bursaries are aligned to the tourism. But if you really compare, that amount of money is small. And I think that in government as a whole, we need to have almost like what we have, a social responsibility program that's dealing with development and supporting SMEs, that you almost need to have something there. Because at this stage, within your budget, there's not sufficient money to have a lot of people that you can support in that. So it's small, and therefore you need to have a process to deal with that. I think in the HR strategy that was presented 2 weeks ago, at the same time when CICTA presented, you will see the alignment of the education part, because we are interacting with the Department of Education around the curriculums and how we will deal with that. So it is on our stat plan, and that alignment needs to be brought into place. The question around I want to place the issue of whether you force change or you negotiate and manage change. I think there's a thin line around that. So in some instances, you need to sort of make sure that there's compliance. What I can say, in what's interesting, and I came from the environment side, and what I've learned in the tourism side, is that your FEDASAS, your business council, there's a very good relationship between your industry and the department around that. And I think that in our stat plan, one of the issues that we've said is that we would like to sort of sign an MOA with industry of how we will deal with certain processes. So I think partly I agree with the concept that you need to sort of have an approach where you get the buy-in into that. But in certain instances, you need legislation and regulations to drive certain processes. And I think specifically in the case of South Africa, where there's slow movement on certain areas, that is the issue about the regulation that has been published by DTI. How is that decided on the threshold and whether the bar is high or too low, I think I will ask Beulah to respond to that one. Chair, let me just check quickly. The issue about from the chair side, you will deal with the tourism cluster and the scorecard and the transparency issue. Tiers of government are dealt with and the IPEC are dealt with. I think you can add to the mentorship and who will pay for that. It's still one of those things that we need to determine. Thresholds. The issues about who's leading the issue about skills development. And I think it's a partnership. We've got the CITAS and we've got the national departments. But I think what one reached the point that you need to say, if you need to make a difference, who's going to take that responsibility? We can't wait for somebody else to come to the party. So that sort of tendency of interacting with the CITAS is still ongoing. I think there's good progress, but at the same time, from a national department side, we need to drive certain processes. And I think that decision we've taken as a management and from our executive authority to move on that. Bill, I think I'll hand over to you. Thanks.
Thank you, Acting DG. I'll start with some of the questions that were asked by the chairperson. How are we going to safeguard against corrupt tendencies and transparency? The Act itself has a paragraph that deals with issues of corruption and fronting, all those tendencies that have on previous narrow base be compromised through empowerment. And how the DTI has now taken that from the Act to creating a mechanism that will allow a business in South Africa to report. Because in the Act, what they say is government will also only know when people come forward to report fronting and such activities. But there has to be a mechanism with which people can report. And what the DTI has done with the BEE portal that has now been launched, on there is a place where business individuals can report businesses that they know are not compliant and might be receiving government contracts or might be doing business as empowered but are not empowered. So that there is that platform that allows for corrupt tendencies to be reported on BEE specifically.
Perhaps you will there in that website be people that had won bids for purposes of seeing that there are no repeat distinct bid winners, that is to the exclusion of other people, that type of thing. Where you can see who won tenders and who has not won tenders, just at first glance.
The listing of tenders that have been won, that goes to National Treasury. So once a business was awarded and was found to have been fronting, they get blacklisted, and that blacklisting is done by Treasury. So they would not be able to do business with government again, but they, being blacklisted means that other businesses will also be aware in the private sector not to do business with such a an entity, because their verification in terms of BEE would be suspect.
In that case, it's just a misunderstanding. There are people who keep on winning bids. Those people, how are they monitored?
In terms of what is called the usual suspects that are constantly getting bids, when you look at the ownership element of broad-based BEE, it starts dealing with that by firstly ensuring that in terms of ownership deals that are done, they are more broad-based, that they include rural communities, that they target the designated groups more than individuals. But also, what you then start to see there is an element that says economic realization. With economic realization under ownership, the scorecard seeks to measure true empowerment of those involved in the deal. Because previously, whilst you see individuals signing up on BEE deals, when you go to exactly what was the financial empowerment they received, you find that it's very little. For them to realize that economic benefit, they would have to be tied to that deal for decades before they can actually realize that financial benefit. And so it begins to protect your rural communities, your people from designated groups from being taken advantage of, but at the same time being broad-based ownership, it then ensures and encourages that you the people that previously were the ones who always benefited from narrow-based empowerment no longer able to do that, but you start bringing into the fold new participants.
Chair, can I just add something? The the question is, or the concern, I think is valid in the sense of people winning the bids over and over again. There is a discussion ongoing with National Treasury at this stage where the intention is to remove the powers from departments around tenders up to a certain amount and get and institute a tender board like in the past. Because the problem is that at this stage, although you've got the PFMA and prescript that needs to deal with that, there's no one mechanism. One department will be very rigid, the other department won't be. And there is, at this stage, a discussion ongoing of reinventing the wheel by bringing back a tender board that will look at that process to address that specific concern you were raising. So I assume it will be an amendment to the PFMA.
The other question that was raised was the levels of government participation, given that tourism transcends the levels of government, local, national, and provincial, and how tourism activities and support aligned through all the three spheres. Given how we operate and the challenges that we have identified in us getting the industry to transform, the major challenge was around alignment of finance and support. And in response to that, we are looking at the pooling of finance that is out there at all levels to ensure that at a one-stop shop, being a transformation unit, one can come and they will be able to see at a provincial level where can they go for support, and they'll be directed to a person. It won't be just an address, but they would be directed to a person at a national level and so forth. But also, the reason why we are doing that is to avoid the situation of double dipping, because what happens is that in certain instances, certain individuals would benefit, would have mastered the mechanism of getting support from government, and they would get support from their municipality, get something from province and from national. So you find all three spheres of government supporting one individual. And so by bringing all of it together and having communication between all three, you are able to start seeing who is being assisted where and how much, and avoid a question where TAP assists someone. Just to give an example, TAP subsidizes some of the marketing activities for entrepreneurs. And so an entrepreneur will have to purchase certain marketing activities, and TAP will then reimburse them, let's say, 50%. That person then gets provincial government to pay for that. They then go to TAP and get 50% of that back in their pocket. They didn't spend anything. They actually, through that activity, made a profit. That was not the intended outcome of support for entrepreneurs. But we now need to start aligning our activities and talking in terms of what support is available at all three tiers of government to ensure that we are able to then support more people as opposed to just individuals who have mastered how the system works. And that will make involve us elevating awareness to our entrepreneurs as to what is required, who do you talk to. And we as the Transformation Unit, I want to make that information readily available for the various enterprises. Mentorship and incentives. Who's going to pay for this, and what kind of incentives are there? The way the tourism scorecard has been developed is that, firstly, it wasn't just a question of, say, the industry needs to transform. The industry needed to transform within a certain context, a context of it growing, developing, and becoming globally competitive. And for it to become globally competitive, skills, people development skills were necessary. And so you'll find that compared to the DTI Code of Good Practice, our weightings are more on your people development elements. And here you're talking your skills development, enterprise development, employment equity, management control. That is where we've put the focus in the first 5 years of implementation. Now, given that, what we've done under these various elements, we have put in what is called enhanced recognition, whereby if a private sector company chooses to implement a certain element, they will get extra points for doing that. And under enterprise development, for instance, things like mentorship gives you enhanced recognition where you provide mentorship and business support for a black enterprise.
even more if this is a woman, a black woman-owned enterprise. And so those are the kind of incentives, realizing that one cannot give cash incentives, but in terms of recognition through the scorecard, what we do, we encourage business to participate in enterprise development activities by giving them enhanced recognition where they go and support the development of black business and specifically black business women. The Tourism Act, the acting DG has answered that, creating conditions to create behavior that is desired as opposed to regulating. With the approach that we've taken on transformation, it is a combination of the two. If you look at, for instance, what I've spoken to with enhanced recognition, we're using the BEE implementation framework to come up with enhanced recognition whereby we encourage business without them having to actually spend money, enhance and encourage the desired behavior. For instance, if you do enterprise development and you assist a black small startup, you get enhanced recognition, which means for every rand that you would have spent, you would be recognized for, it would be recognized as 1 rand 25. And this money, by the way, doesn't have to be cash. If you spend your hours as a mentor, you spend 5 hours mentoring a small business, you sit with them, you go through their business plans and assist them in developing marketing strategies, that is your time which your company would have paid for. And so you would equate that time to what you're paid for, what you're paid at your company. And if it's a black business, you'd then multiply that by the enhanced recognition factor of 1.25, which then allows you then to claim more points, helping you achieve your compliance much quicker than you would have if you didn't use the element, the sub-elements that are in the scorecard. On the other hand, the Act is an Act of Parliament which says businesses across the country need to be part of the transformation agenda. And the Act provides us guidelines in terms of how and who is to participate in this process. Your thresholds of 5 million, for instance, have been developed looking at revenue services, minimum annual turnover of those that are reporting, to say your small businesses in South Africa generally, with 5 million per annum turnover, is that the minimum which we will require for them to participate in transformation. However, various sectors have their own different makeup. For instance, with tourism, it's totally different. Majority of our enterprises fall below the 5 million, hence it had to be lowered. And that was recognized even by the DTI in reviewing the comments received from the industry that, yes, indeed, it is a justified requirement that for tourism we lower the threshold to ensure that there is there is meaningful participation from the industry. But the actual scorecard itself, which is the implementation framework, has been designed to encourage the desired behavior, providing incentives that will make it more attractive for private sector to participate in the process.
I think the concern was not about the amount being higher, but it was it should be lower.
No, I'm coming to that
okay,
as well.
Okay,
the 2.5 had two. I'll go to that one immediately. And then the 2.5. The 2.5 million turnover per annum is the threshold for companies that will need to be verified and submit their verification scores for us to report to cabinet. So it is for businesses that are already in existence. This is not for startups. It is for businesses that are already there and need to report on how they are empowered. With the design of a scorecard, your startups are covered in enterprise development. For a business to comply, that is businesses that are operating above 2.5 million, for them to reach their compliance, they will need to support your startups. Under enterprise development, under preferential procurement, which requires businesses in tourism to procure from SMMEs as well as from medium-sized enterprises. So you will see that when it comes to your startups and those businesses that actually need support, which in most cases will be those that fall below the 2.5 or who are just setting up, support is actually provided to them through the implementation framework under enterprise development as well as preferential procurement. So that 2.5 is not to say for you to participate in empowerment, you must have at least 2.5 turnover. No. 2.5 turnover is for those that are already in business, for them to reach compliance, to report, they have to at least have a 2.5 million per annum turnover. Then they're required to report by law, and they will then have to implement the scorecard, the tourism scorecard within their businesses, and indicate how they are supporting other businesses to grow as well. The list of businesses that have been assisted. Through the reporting mechanism from public sector, that is one of the objectives that we will be trying to achieve, to ensure that we start getting a full view as to how are we, through the various programs that we are running at the different tiers of government, are impacting on transformation according to the different elements, on ownership, on skills development. We will need to measure how many people have been part of skills development programs, how many people have been part of enterprise development projects, which will talk to mentorship, which will talk to access to finance, how many people have been part of preferential procurement. Of the budgets that we have as government, how much of it has been spent on empowered entities. On employment equity, and employment equity links back to the Department of Labor's Act, where companies have to submit annually the employment equity report, and so we'll be measuring that as well. So you start seeing how, in terms, when you start reporting on the various elements and the impact that we're having as government, we are then able to present the impact that we have in terms of numbers of people that are assisted and numbers of students that have been assisted to develop careers in the sector. How will the five people be identified that will participate? We are currently looking at getting a group of 20 women, and this group of 20 women are assisted by our partnership with associations. And these associations, by the way, do span across not just those in urban areas, but we also have a partnership with an NGO called Open Africa, and they develop rural tourism routes. And through the development of these rural tourism routes, what you find is that we are able to identify women entrepreneurs within those routes. So these women will be part of the 20 that will participate in the mentorship program. And out of the pool of the 20 women, we will identify five that will be top performers within that 20 that will then be put forward to participate in the annual BEE Awards. Department of Education link, the ATDG did touch on that. And just to go back, this presentation, our business plan is part of a bigger strategic business plan, and within that you start seeing how the work that we do from a facilitation and monitoring perspective then links up with other areas like your human resource development, and under human resource development, that's where the linkages with the Department of Education take place. So we under transformation do not facilitate those, but those fall under your human resource development. But we also work together with that unit as part of a bigger strategic business plan. But also, what I want to stress is that our role is that of facilitating and monitoring. And part of that says that we will need to identify strategic partners in the work that we do, in the facilitation work that we do, to avoid duplication. And so we need to look within our environment. Who is feeding into skills development, employment equity, and start leveraging on each other's plans to ensure that we then address our transformation targets. But at the same time, this is within the department. At the same time, we have partnerships with the private sector where they would indicate they have these challenges, and then we would use the programs that we have internally to develop programs in partnership with the private sector to ensure that we then assist them to reach compliance, because our ultimate goal is to ensure that private sector complies. And in assisting them to comply, we need to look at the requirements of the scorecard and respond to those requirements of the scorecard using the linkages that we have through our the other units within their department. There was a question around partnerships with big business, that it's difficult for small business to go to a Forkesna and the like. I would just like to highlight that actually Southern Sun does have an Adopt a Guest House program where they take bed and breakfast establishments that are supported to first help them increase their quality standards, so it increases their grading, help them with skills as to how to run a bed and breakfast, simple things like managing your linen. Also, when they have full capacity, whatever overflow they have, those that have gone through the program and have demonstrated the ability to run their guest houses professionally, Southern Sun, then wherever they've got an overflow, would use those guest houses to accommodate some of their clients. And the report that we've had at one of our focal points from the Tshwane Metro, which participates in that program, is that majority of their guest houses have started seeing actual economic benefits from it with increased bed nights, but also the confidence in running and establish an accommodation establishment professionally. And so they're not that rich, that difficult to reach. These entities are developing programs to specifically target your startups. And we find it encouraging as the transformation unit that it is happening. What we want to see happen, though, is that we want to see more accommodation establishments like your Southern Sun, your Proteas, take up such programs to ensure that we start seeing more and more small businesses also become part of the growth and development that they are at the moment experiencing. A lack of alignment, you've addressed ACDG. I think on my part, that's all.
And I'll just add that I think the issue about startups in our strat plan on page 33, we've identified a specific project that we would like to deal with, of which 8 will be in the rural. The amounts are small, but that's linked to your financial resources you've got. So we've built that in to start slow. I think when I was listening, sometimes the perception is that there's a lot of money. You can do as much as you like, but within the financial means. And I think that's the sort of the challenge for us and in government as a whole. If I was listening over the news this morning, Defence is saying they're 7.1 billion short. So, I mean, if we as tourism are talking, and I discussed this morning with Rolf, I mean, what we've asked National Treasury is, in fact, $1.5 billion over 3 years for us to do what we would like to do. But within your financial means, you can only do so much. And I think we try to cover all the areas. And I must say I'm quite confident from the questions that most of those issues that we've addressed in our business plan, perhaps on not on the level we would like it to be, but at least we have flagged it in there to deal with that. So our focus, and I think that's coming to the Honourable Member around rural, is that rural is one of our priority areas that we would like to sort of drive tourism. But it's a partnership also with the provinces because it lies within their domain and how we as national and province work together in pushing that. Thank you, Chair.
Well, it was 7.5 billion. Run short in peacetime. I didn't know if there's a war then how much you need. Mamu Jobe and then Babu Khala.
Yeah, I think it's just I've changed my mind. You know, Chairperson, before I asked my question, last week we visited, I want to share this experience with the committee. Last week we visited the Cape Town Airport. And one of the concerns I raised was, for instance, that it takes a long time for the luggage to come from the flight to the carousel. And you find that you wait for some 15 minutes or more before our luggage comes. You know, today I'm late, not because of the luggage, but it was because of the shuttle. Because as soon as we got out of that plane and went into the part where we collect the luggage, the carousel was already moving and our suitcases were there and ready for us to pick up. So I thought that one should really appreciate that. Yeah. And so maybe the concerns that we raise sometimes, not realizing that people are listening, people are listening, and they do respond. That is to be appreciated. Now, my question is a very small one, but for me it's important. The question of alignment of the budgets at provincial and a local level, but of course that also means national level, because I take it that that's where the main funds come from anyway. When I look at the budget, a budget for 34, to me, it seems as if it is the South African tourism that receives the biggest chunk of the funds. Now, I wanted to find out. You are saying that to be able, for instance, for us to have this alignment so that, you know, the funds are used for tourism at provincial level and maybe also local government level, there will be a need for a structure. I wanted to find out, can this be done by the South African tourism, which gets the biggest chunk? Where do its funds go to? Don't they go to the provinces, for instance, and maybe ultimately to the local government? Can't it be the structure, for instance, that ensures that this alignment does, in fact, happen? And I think it's a very important point, because without actually taking you far back, a chairperson. You know, when we started here in the early 90s, as a government, for instance, prioritized areas like, I'm just making an example, education and health. And this was done also in terms of the budget. Education used to get the biggest chunk at that time. But you found that when then the funds were transferred to the provinces, then the provinces used them differently. They did not prioritize that education that was prioritized at national level. They did not prioritize health, which was prioritized at national level. I'm then saying, of course, now I know the situation is different. I'm then saying it is possible, but I think it is the department that has to find a way of ensuring that it actually happens, that the provinces do not undermine tourism, the local government also should not undermine tourism. The funds must be used precisely for that purpose. I'm not sure if I'm making myself clear, but I just wanted to say, do we need another structure? There are so many structures already. Couldn't this be done by the South African tourism to trace their funds and ensure that the funds that they have given us are used precisely for the purposes that they are meant for? You see, this whole thing about rural development and the development of tourism in the rural areas, which is the concern of this committee, it's been the concern of this committee for the whole year, we've been seeing this stuff. But of course, as I said, as we said in the strategic meeting, that we noticed that the strategy is actually now prioritizing rural development. The DG has just said so now. We appreciate that, but now it is the implementation that we have to ensure that it actually happens. Thank you very much, Your Honor.
Honorable Hawaii, in fact, I think we shall have to plan for the next item on the agenda now.
Thank you, Chapter. The man is only simple in terms of this booklet, whether is it user friendly. And it is there, please come to get it. Also, I think it will be proper if it can also go to our constituency offices so that many people can access this letter and they can use it and what is happening to it. Because there's a lack of tourism issues on the other part of the country, probably on the rural side. It will be important because we are having constituencies. Some of us very constituencies at the rural area. So people must actually know exactly what is happening in the tourism. When they ask questions, it will be easy for them because they had read the booklet and it has already directed them to a specific point. Thank you.
Okay, last responses, please.
Chair, I will just deal with I like this question from the member. Just to say I'm happy to hear about the service excellence and what's happening. Just to say that we as a department in partnership with FEDASA and the Tourism Business Council has started with a service excellence program. We hope to target 250,000 people from now till the World Cup on service excellence. It's a mind change of people delivering services because we need to show South Africans we are ready. The alignment of the budget, let me start by saying South African tourism is a national entity that is mandated to market South Africa internationally. So SIT is not the marketing agency for internal. Therefore, within each of the provinces, you've got 9 provincial departments. Most of them are linked to finance or economic affairs. But you've got 9 similar, like SIT on a provincial level, which are there to market the province. And I think that's where the problem comes in. So I think it's a very informative question of how do we align it. I believe the only way you're going to deal with this is by changing the constitution around where the mandate is. And I think that is a quite difficult debate. So what we'd like to do is sort of through a legislative process and also with the joint ventures with the provinces to define that better. Because there was only a South African Tourism Act, and that was amended in 1996, if I'm right, that was just dealing with tourism. So it was never a real act that's dealing with tourism. And hopefully we can address some of these issues. I must agree that I think that we need to make sure, like education, like environment now, like health, that you define the budget structure up front. So when the money goes down, the funds goes as per allocated by the national treasury. I was just given an example this morning. The minister announces about 2 months ago that we've reached 9.5 million tourists that arrived in South Africa. That was up to, I think, in January. If each of that tourist only bought one postcard for 1 rand, it was 9 million rand. Each tourist then buys one stamp for that postcard. It's another 9 million rand. Now, that is revenue that's coming in. Tourism is, in fact, I think the average spend is about 1.8 million rand per day per tourist. If you multiply that by the 9 million that arrived, what amount of money are going back into the fiscus that are not redirected into tourism? And I think we need to get that right. And that is our responsibility from a department side to convince our colleagues within National Treasury of how that works. So, Chair, thank you very much.
Yula?
The booklet will be user-friendly, what we'll do once it's released, we'll just through the chair, see how we can then distribute to your constituencies. But it does outline how the 7 elements work. It gives a brief background on tourism as an industry, what constitutes tourism, what are the different areas, the subsectors of tourism. So then it not only gives you information on empowerment, but also on the industry itself and how a person who might be interested in developing a career or a business in tourism, how they can then start making inroads for themselves.
Okay, thank you very much for your presentation. And then there's Mamundlovu, your experience was my experience as well during the weekend. The minute I was going to the carousel, I found my bag. I think AXA has done something that quite positive, but I do not know. We'll have to collect experiences from different people. In as far as tourism is concerned,
I do not know whether perhaps the times that you talk to the public is the times that we do not listen to radios, like local radios, the Zulu and so forth. We tend to get some agricultural information and some other departments, but I've never come across information from tourism. And perhaps your public relations department could look at into reaching the different publics in your that you interact with, because for the poor, the small business, and the rural, it's easier to reach them through local radio, and then TVs. On TV, I see normally private sector these things interactions, and the type of geographic information on SABC 1, 2, 3 and ETV. But the department, I do not know. I haven't come across that information. But I think as we are having changes towards BE and so forth, I think we've got to expand our horizons to other stakeholders as well. I think in that way we are going to capture a lot of people. The question of finances that you have identified, it is our experience. I think the first step has been identification, and then only the other steps, I think we hope that there is going to be improvement because the problem has been identified. How and who should go to IDC and so forth, let us just keep on communicating, booklets and those types of things. But the Sawubona is targeted towards people who are earning much more. But there are people that should be targeted, the low-income people and the SMMEs. I think we've got to find a way to improve. I'm not saying that we are not communicating, but perhaps it's not something where we are aware of. And lastly, thank you very much for the good presentation. We wish you all the best, and we are going to raise some issues, and then we are going to be having our debate on the 4th of May, and then as we are preparing for that, also perhaps we are going to use some of the information to try and reach out with the information. But otherwise, thank you very much.
Thank you, Jay, colleagues. And just here to say that I think one of the biggest impacts we've had is the Disky Dance on TV.
Okay. But it is not attributed to you. Okay, but thank you very much. And the second area, perhaps let us break for about 2 minutes, and then we'll deal with the tabling of committee report on budget 34 tourism and announcements, if there are any, and then we'll break. We'll be committee, but we are not going to completely adopt it. We're just going to table it. So let us break for about 2 minutes and then come back.
Oh, no, it's not.
I'm sure they got people.
Yeah.
Look at that. Thank you. I feel like a partner for all the years we've been coming together.
You need something. When do you think so? When do you think you report by?
We're not supposed to email to anybody.
Okay, all right.
So you can ask them for a copy.
Okay, let's pick it up on the website.
Yeah.
No problem, because then I can get a gauge of, seeing as I know. what's going on. Take a copy with you, you can read through it, and I'm sure Rashad can aid you.
Let us have that information before then we submit it to the ATC, and then the ATC is going to publish this information as our distinct report of the Portfolio Committee on Tourism on Budget 34. And then we have repeated tourism. So let us just try and push that one up as well. Yes, one job.
I was going to say, Chairperson, if we make comments, we send them directly to the secretary. Now, how is the secretary going to know that this is an acceptable comment? In other words, can he just put the comments into the report without finding out somewhat whether this comment is acceptable, would be acceptable to the committee? I'm trying to involve you.
Okay, no, you submit it to the chairperson. And then if there are changes, the final draft will come back to the committee.
Oh, I see.
Yes.
It will still come back to us.
Well,
if there are changes.
If there are changes, well. Okay, item 2 has been agreed. Then there is announcement. From my side, is today is the last meeting before we go for debate on the 4th of May. Is that true? Yes. So if that is true, is let us begin with preparations for the debate, because the week between the or starting on the 27th, I think 26th, is a constituency week. So the first day or the Mondays will be constituency work, and most of us will be coming back on Tuesday. So the first day will be debating day. So let us begin with processes of debates, and then I do not know whether perhaps within this the people who are here. People would like to have areas of specialization, but otherwise perhaps they can decide at the study group level. Like who, Mam Jove, can comment on anything because she is the only one. But we do not want to repeat the repeat of things. I think the majority party is having a meeting later, a study group meeting, to avoid that repeat of things. You talk on transformation, somebody else talk on that, on transformation, the other talks on transformation. We cannot afford that. Better to divide. But I think we shall discuss that, especially in parties that have more than one member.
Even to the opposition, we don't have anything fundamental differing in terms of our operations. But it will be proper if we take it to the different study groups. And I'm not sure we are going to differ more, but it will be better and proper to take it to the different study groups. And maybe those who are going to debate, good luck.
Yeah, I mean, the thing fundamentally is that we agree from different perspectives. And the duty of a credible, distinct opposition party is sometimes to differ with the majority party. It could not be fundamental, but for the sake of our democracy to be credible, we can't all be seen exactly the same. So, okay, I think that one is agreed, right? And then, is there any other announcement?
Chair, thank you. On my side, Chair, I just wanted to check with members. I was approached by the Office of the Deputy Minister, Hanekom, who said to me there are invites that were sent to the members for a function tomorrow at 7:30 at Iziko. Now, I wanted to check whether members did receive such invites because it never came through our office. They said that they have sent it directly to members pigeonholed. So I'm not sure whether members did receive that invite or not.
Okay, look for those invitations and then respond to them. Because I don't have a copy. Okay, I don't have a copy. So, but if they are there, because how do we respond to them if it is by word of mouth? Okay, no. But thank you very much for a productive meeting, ladies and gentlemen. Thanks.